Hello.
Lori Ray Waugh.
Yep, that's me.
This is Jay Michaels. If I'm on the line, you're on the air. Good to speak to you.
I'm on the air. How are you?
Not bad. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. I'm doing great.
I would think so. Your show just opened, what, like 48 hours ago?
About that, yes.
The bare truth. That show somewhat breaks a whole bunch of boundaries, even for off Broadway. But we're going to get into that in a second. Let's talk about you for a minute. You're another journeyman. I recently did a program about theatrical journeymen, and you are certainly not the, hey, I just graduated and I can't wait to take the world by storm. You have already taken the world by storm. Tell us about you. Tell us about director, producer, film actress, et cetera, Lori Ray Waugh.
Well, there's so much to tell in so little time. So let's just say I'm enjoying the journey of directing. I'm enjoying the journey of working in film, producing. The one thing that I like the most about what I do is I take original scripts that called me by what I read, a picture that the script paints to me, and say, this is what I got to do. This is what I've got to do. And that's what I'm doing. And I'm loving every minute of it. I love working with seasoned actors, but I also like working with newbies so that they can see what a journey is to get them from point A to the final product. And we've been having a good time all along the way.
I've noticed that in your casts, there's the old war horses like Ken Conklin, who's been around a very long time, let's just say, and you'll have young folk in the show with him and with other old pros. Do you see the learning element happening right there? Do you see in rehearsal the symbiotic relationship happening?
It's so much fun. Working the way this playwright H.G. Brown wrote The Bare Truth, he wrote it for senior citizens. People over 60 are the two couples. And you see these two couples, they're all over 60, but you wouldn't know it because of the amount of energy the four of them have on stage. Mm-hmm. It's remarkable. And then the four young ones are in their, late 30s, early 40s. Playing kids of the Baxters in this, and the daughter-in-law, and then I'm not going to talk about the fourth character because that'll give it away.
Okay.
But it's a great piece, and the way they all work together is just fabulous to watch. The journey took us a while, and it got us to a point. And then we had to get over that hump, and in doing so and running the show before we open and just getting everybody to click, that's what has to happen. Like, you have certain people that pop open early and certain people that pop open late. And what I mean by that is I look at popcorn and the kernels. Everybody's a kernel. And when they start getting their character and what they're looking for and how we discuss the characterization and where they're going with it, sooner or later, their kernels start popping open.
What do you have to
and
do as a director? What do you have to do as a director? You have one kernel that has popped immediately, and there they are. You're getting a stellar performance with book still in hand. Others, it takes much more work, much more energy. How do you as a director balance the notion of getting that latecomer ready for the show without boring the individual who's already set to go, if you will?
Well, it's always giving everybody encouragement.
Okay.
It's looking to see what is happening, what's needed, and it's encouragement. It's discussing the character. It's finding out what do they feel about the character and the journey of the character from the beginning of the play to the end, and riding the roller coaster of the emotions that happen throughout the play. So it's once you start giving the encouragement and you keep having discussion and you keep working with them as well as their co-actors on stage, it starts to gel. And when that happens, it's
it's beautiful to watch.
So you put everyone onto the roller coaster and say, okay, we're going for a ride. And when they throw their hands in the air and scream, there you go. You've reached a point, but you create the journey for them all and then
exactly.
put them on the ride. Cool. Very cool.
Well, I have everybody look at it as that they're, you know, the playwright has written a play that who's running the scene. And then who's getting on that train or that roller coaster to ride the scene with them?
Oh, that's very clever. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we're talking about journeys. Your journey began essentially honoring Michael Bennett. I know from every bio I've ever seen or written for you, I've always seen that one credential about that historic AIDS benefit that you were part of. Tell us about that.
That was an interesting journey for me because someone that I knew from high school was working with John Glines. Mm-hmm. And when John was working on Stamp Out AIDS, he was determined to put on a one-night-only performance. So my friend Tug, who, as I said, we were in high school. He was a couple of years younger than me. He and his writing partner wrote a song. They took it to John. John wanted to raise money for Stamp Out AIDS. Knowing Tug, he got me involved in it. So I became the stage manager on the show. And we were dealing with actors and actresses from Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there was 14 that had a part in this. It went up on July 4th. 1987. It was done at the Ballroom on 28th Street.
Oh, yes.
Which only seats about 150 to 200. And the night, the day Michael Bennett died, the show sold out.
Of course.
Everybody wanted to come see it. We had some great people from, La Cage aux Folles, which was on Broadway at the time, Fences, which was on Broadway at the time. I'm trying to think of the other shows, but there were some great people that were a part of this. And they all gave their time after their show went down on July 4th. We didn't even start until I think it was midnight.
Wow.
All the players got there, and then it was a 2.5-hour show.
Was this your first show?
No, it wasn't my first show, but it was my first stage managing show for an event like that.
I would imagine.
When I came to New York in 1980, I ended up stage managing 21 shows in 7 years. Met my friend Tug, who introduced me to John Glines, and I worked on his series of gay one-act plays called Wild Blue that he moved from the Perry Street Theater up to the theater on 45th Street. So he went from off to an off-Broadway house, and I helped move the show. And then I took a little bit of a break and then started directing.
So you began at the tail end of the historic off-Broadway movement, which was the 60s to the 80s. So you walked right into the end of that in a very powerful moment. How did that affect you? You say you took a break and then became a director. How did your roller coaster ride work for you as a kernel of popcorn?
Well, I popped open as a stage manager because there were certain directors that always wanted to work with me. And I enjoyed the journey with a couple of different directors that I worked with. Then I just wanted to, you know, reset and see what else was out there to do besides theater. And that's what I did. I took a break of no theater, going to watch theater, but not participating in it until a friend of mine said to me, I need you to stage manage this show. And I'm like, okay. Got me back into it. Then she ended up having to play the lead. So she asked me to finish directing it for her, which then gave me the bug that, okay, this is what I want to do. Because you can put your creative juices and your creative hat on over stage managing, which is just being the nuts and bolts of the show.
Sure.
The director has the creative vision of what the show should look like.
Wow. So you had the old 42nd Street story, you know, kid, you're going out there as stage manager, you're coming back the director. That's
cool. You could say that. You could say that.
That is pretty cool. Speaking of historic movements, you are one of the resident, if not the leading resident director of the legendary American Theater of Actors, which has been around in the theatrical movement for nearly 50 years. You're a known name in there. It's like sometimes you don't even put a period. It's a comma, Lori Waugh, when saying American Theater of Actors. How is it to work over there? What keeps you coming back?
Well, for me, it's several things. One, it could be a playwright that I've already worked with, and he's handed me a new script that I fall in love with, talk to Mr. Jennings about putting it in time and space, and then finding the actors for it. Going for it.
So the authors many times come to you. You're known enough by these authors that they're going to say, okay, I got a script, call Lori.
Exactly. Or like The Bare Truth, that was a script that was sent into Mr. Jennings at ATA. And when I'm looking for something to do, he'll hand me a series of scripts to read.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I judge them by, does it call to me? Does it make me laugh? Does it make me angry? Does it pull on my heartstrings in any way, shape, or form?
Gotcha.
And if it does that, then I tell him I want to do it. Then he contacts the playwright and makes sure that we can still do it. And that's how this happens.
So you've just answered my other question. What makes your work so compelling? The fact that you go into it as an audience member. You're sitting down and reading this and saying, will I be entertained? Will it make me feel? The moment it does that, you want to get your message across. So that's really cool.
Exactly.
So many people intellectualize. It's so nice to hear someone just say, hey, I liked it. I felt good reading it. It's time to do it. Let's talk about the play itself. Now, where in the world, you know, people make fun of millennials these days, and they talk about the young folk in the world. But we're also having another culture shock, if you will. With shows like Frankie and Grace on Netflix, we're seeing the older generation return and take its place again, which is marvelous. And your play, The Bare Truth, which deals in nudism, has the twist that it's two older couples. And I won't go into more details. I'll just say that the subject of being nudists is a major part of the play, hence the title. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about these generational things? Do you think you have a real responsibility with this play? Does it step up on that level that you're essentially speaking for an entire generation?
I don't know if I'd say I'd be speaking for an entire generation. What I think really the play is about is looking at a generation and how they deal with the couple, the Baxters, dealing with, you know, they move to Florida to be closer to their kids, and the kids have no boundaries. They show up at any and all hours to visit mom and dad without letting them know they're coming.
Huh.
So the parents are looking to put in boundaries. Instead of, you know, dumping your kid on your grandparents because you have a hot date or you're going away for the weekend. Instead of asking them, would you mind taking on child A or child B or child C? You know, would you mind taking them on? Just saying, well, you know, we'll dump the child here and you guys will be good with it. And that's, you know, what you see in some of the generations now, whereas they don't take into consideration their parents. They look at them as babysitters.
Interesting. So this piece spotlights the viability, not only the viability of the older generation, but their own schedules. You know, you're right. We think, oh, that's okay. Grandpa will just take care of the kids because what else does he have to do? But we're in a world now where there's plenty else that they have to do.
Exactly.
Interesting. Really cool. Well, what's next for you? Now, this is opening and running and doing really well, I understand. You had Robert Viagas in the audience yesterday to review. It's getting excellent notices so far, which is great. What's next? What's down the line for you?
Funny you should ask. I have two plays that have already been approved by Mr. Jennings to go up at ATA. The
Great.
First one is called After the Wake, and that is written by Beth Newberry, a dear friend of mine.
The Beth Newberry. Okay.
That's correct. The Beth Newberry.
That's great.
And secondly, it's What About Walter, and that's written by Irving Greenfield.
Another favorite of yours.
It will be the fifth of his plays that I've done in 5 years.
Wow. So Beth Newberry is quite prolific in this industry. She has, I know her name from Ripple Effect Artists. I know her name from the Midtown International Theater Festival. I've known her name everywhere. So that's really great. That's really great that you guys are collaborating on that. And Irving Greenfield, I remember he is an adventure writer. He's an adventure novel writer. And your latest piece with him, the previous one, was about how his adventure characters come to life. How is it to work with him? Five plays, eh? And he's calling you back again. What's the magic? What's the love affair between you two?
It's the way he writes. It's all about the way he writes. Band of Bisbee was about, and that was the play I previously directed, was about a series of novels that got banned in the town of Bisbee, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And it got banned because of the sexual content in the books. Not only did Bisbee, Arizona ban just those 20 books, but they banned every book he ever wrote.
Wow.
So that was the reason to take that one on.
Oh, for sure. Now you just sparked something. My last question to you. Now you say each play that you read has to touch you in some way. Do you have a criteria, if you will, behind that being touched? Not just like you're talking about pieces that were being banned. Here you're talking about the current one is about the older generation and securing their place in the world when you really get down to it. Do you feel the parable in these shows? Do you look at something and saying, wait a minute, this, I know you, a couple of the works that I've seen of yours, they all have some sort of underlying element, like you're helping this kind of person. You're helping this kind of couple. Do you look for some sort of message in your works? Do you look for a particular feeling within the works, other than just, you know, I love it, it touched me? Do you feel a parable? Do you sit there and say, oh, I'm helping the older generation, I'm helping understand literacy, I'm helping this kind of person? Do you feel that when you do it, or is it just sort of, my favorite expression is, are you a genius by accident or on purpose? Do you find these things naturally, like, or do you have a criteria that you look for?
Oh, wow. You said a mouthful. No, I don't have a criteria that I look for. Normally when I read a play, it has to touch, move, and inspire me in some regard. In some cases, it's as you're reading a line that one of the actors are saying, it gives me a visual picture in my head. It makes me laugh. And when I get a visual picture like that, it's like, I gotta do it. If it touches me to where it reminds me of family or friends or people who have passed, but there's something funny about what I'm reading, that'll spark me to do it. It's all about what the writer is writing. And if it's good writing and it really just resonates with me, then I'm over the moon with it. And I've read a lot of different plays that I would want to direct, but as you read the plays and you read what the playwright has put together as a set in a small theater like ATA and a 2-week run, it would be very hard to do some of these because of their sets.
Mm-hmm. So you sort of answered my question. You're a genius by accident. you find these amazing works, you're able to fit them into the legendary ATA, and rapid fire you get them across, which is really brilliant. Film work, I know you and the late Steve Silver were working on several film projects. Do you have any more film projects coming up?
At the moment, no. I can see a couple of the plays that I've directed become films. They would be great. But I don't have any time at the moment to really figure out how to put it all together yet.
Gotcha. So it's on the radar. So if a filmmaker is listening to this and they want to talk to you and continue the legacy that you and Steve Silver started so successfully with The Watchtower, they should definitely get in contact with you.
Yes.
Very cool. Very cool. Laurie, thank you so much for taking the time and speaking with me and my legion of fans. And good luck with this show, and I look forward to the next two. Irving Greenfield again and Beth Newbery. Excellent, excellent. When are those going up? Do you have ideas as of yet?
One is going to be in the spring, and the other one probably late summer, early fall.
Very cool. Very cool. Just keeps you busy. Excellent. Excellent. I will make sure our listeners know exactly how long The Bare Truth is running, where they can go, etc., and how to get in contact with you to follow your illustrious career. Thank you so much, and I look forward to speaking with you soon.
Thank you for taking the time, Jay. I really do appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure. I will talk to you soon.
Okay.
Ciao.
Bye now.